Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the TMGS. It's the Michael Gay Show. And by the way, the time is now 6.03 p.m. on the East Coast, 3.03 p.m. on the West Coast. Today is March the 18th, 2023. And I want to thank you for joining us and tuning in. If you're not calling into the show, well, this is what you can do. You can go to www.talkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/TMGS. And you can join the chat room if you have any questions or comments during the show. Go ahead and post them in the chat room. It only takes just less than a minute to get involved, and I will read your questions or comments on the air. And happy Saturday to you. Wow. Been a crazy week. Crazy 2 weeks, and possibly a crazy next week coming up. But let me just share a little bit about what I'm checking out right now. Right now, it is March Madness in college basketball, and congratulations to the Kennesaw Owls. Yeah, I'll say it again. The Kennesaw Owls. I'm sure some of y'all are probably like, who the hell are the Owls? Well, actually, that is a basketball team here in Georgia. I believe they're in the Cobb County area. Yeah. And they made it to the tournament. They got bumped out in the first round yesterday. But, you know, got to give these guys a lot of credit because that program is really building. The Kennesaw Owls program is really building. And when you think about it, they went up against, I think it was Xavier. I think the Owls were ranked at 13, Xavier at 3. The Owls were ahead like about, what, 10, 12, 13 points or so in the first quarter. And they let it slip away, you know, between the first quarter and the second quarter and so on and so forth. And they only lost by 5 points against a number 3 seed team, Xavier. So much due respect. I mean, everybody was hoping that they could go further. To be honest, I knew that they weren't going to get that much further, but I really hoped that they would have got through the first round. That would have been such a major upset in college basketball. And to be honest, I'm more of a fan of college basketball than pro, because these young cats, I mean, they go at it, and it's win or go home. It's not like NBA where the best of 5, you know. No, you win or you go home. So congratulations still to the Kennesaw Owls, you guys. Keep an eye out for this team. They are going to be back, I'm pretty sure, in the not-too-distant future. They are a force to be reckoned with. And really, in college, a lot of these athletes are not going to the big schools like they used to. I want to go play for this school that has championships and everything. No, they're staying home. A lot of them are staying with the local colleges as the programs build and get better. They want to represent their home. And what's so crazy is that that's the only college team in Georgia that made it to the tournament. Georgia didn't make it. Georgia Tech didn't make it. And you can name any other men's basketball team, you know, that has an opportunity to, you know, compete for the tournament. No one but the Kennesaw Owls. Congratulations on at least getting there, making it such a close game. I know your program is going to be bigger and better next season. So, y'all, look out for it. I said it right here, the Kennesaw Owls. All right, so let me go ahead and open up the mic. I see she's here, the lady of the house, Miss Janet Pollock Hawkins.
Yeah, for the Kennesaw Owls. I'm right next door to them. I live right next door.
Yeah,
my daughter graduated from there. She got her bachelor's at Kennesaw State. It's a highly accredited school.
Wow. I said wow because you know what? It's one of those schools that people, I know when I first came here to Georgia, when
it
I heard about Kennesaw State.
But it's big now.
Oh, yeah. No, it wasn't. You know, remember, I worked in construction, and I had the opportunity to do some work on the campus, right? And the one thing that really amazed me, I had to do a ceiling replacement in this particular library. Let me tell you guys, this library is a historical library. And I'm not saying the building itself. What's in that library is historical. The books they have in there, I mean, when we went in there, I went in there, it's small. It has a glass closure. It's real small. And, I mean, the books in there are unreplaceable. When we got ready to do the little small ceiling in there, we had to put plastic everywhere on the carpet, over all the furniture, tape it down. The books had to be – they didn't remove the books. They just had to be covered up, plastic down. Everything had to be covered. I mean, from sealing the floor. And had to be very careful. They did not want to remove any of the furniture because the furniture in there, which is not much, it's just a few chairs. And
It was then, not now. This school has expanded so much. It's like a city.
Janet, can I finish my story, please? I'm just saying. Okay, thank you. This particular room had books in there that were worth thousands of dollars. That's how come it was a room that had an enclosure and that had its own alarm system. I remember replacing the ceiling in there. And there was always a person there when I was doing it. I don't recall the name of that particular, but it was not the library for all the students to come into it. It was a historical library that had books in there that you didn't see folks sitting in there, okay? I'm just saying. When I was asked or when I was told, hey, look, you're doing this job over here at Kennesaw College. It's a library. I'm thinking, yeah, a library that the students go into? No. And when I got there to that floor and looked, I'm like, what? It's really small, you know, when you look at it. But when you walk in there, it's a totally different. The walls that were not that did not have books on it were like handcrafted wood walls. It's not sheetrock. Okay? It's not that. That's what I'm saying. And it was just so amazing. I was like, wow. And I remember the caretaker talking to him, and he, you know, I don't recall where this was years ago. But I was in awe that looking at these covers and on these books and everything. I'm like, man, look at this. You could tell this was not made in a factory. These are handmade books. You know what I'm saying? You could tell that they were binded by hand. Now, do your research, anybody that's listening, and check it out. This particular library at Kennesaw State University, and I'm sure other universities may have something similar, but I had never seen or knew anything like this. And to be honest, for me to remember, I was just honored to be in that room because they said not everybody can go in there. I'm just replacing the ceiling tile. That's it. But congratulations to the Owls for at least making it to the first round, and I'm sure they're going to be amazing next season. Y'all better look out. North Georgia's bringing you something. Well, close to North Georgia. All right, so let me go ahead and get to some of the topics. But before I do that, Janet, how's your day been? How's your week been?
Good. But like I said, Michael, I had to let you finish. Kennesaw State has grown. It's got all this fabulous housing. It's got football, basketball, baseball. It's got all the sports. They got their own police. It's huge. It's like a little city within itself because it's right next to Woodstock. So I see it. I mean, I go through it all the time. Yeah.
And
but
I believe
like I said, my daughter graduated.
I believe because, see, for the people that don't live in Georgia, don't understand of how over the years, I've seen how north of Atlanta has created new cities. I remember north of Atlanta, okay? I remember when Woodstock only had one street light, okay? I remember that.
Not no more.
I remember the mall. I remember when Town Center Mall, which I worked on, there was nothing there but the shell of the mall, okay? And the only other thing that was up the street was a Texaco gas station. After that, all you saw was woods and trees. Now it's a new city. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see it. And I know for a fact, like I said, with Kennesaw College, I see where they got a great-looking stadium. Their football stadium is awesome-looking. I know some people that I work with, young folks, I ask them where you go to school at. They say Kennesaw. You know? Many young people are starting to – well, I'm saying that many young people are starting to want to stay home at a credible college. You know what I'm saying? Instead of having to travel, you know, to the state over like Alabama or, you know, to go
you know, Georgia has more house. It's got, you know, all the – historical colleges that has
historical colleges that they have in Atlanta. But here's the bad part is that where many people, even though they're good schools, they don't want to, and this is the ones that I have talked to, okay? I'm not saying off the top of my head. Many say they love to go there, but unfortunately, the location. Yeah, there is still crime in Atlanta. Many people don't want to be in the city going to school because the HBCU or the Atlanta University Center, where you have Morehouse, Clark, and all the others, it's some crime down there. There's no doubt. So, but now as these other colleges that are more north or maybe in the south of the city, a lot of students are like, okay, they got good programs. Mm-hmm. I'll go to Kennesaw. I'll go to, you know, what is the one more west? Well, West Georgia. You know, they'll go to those campuses as their programs become better and the area is safer.
See, I have a grandson who graduated from West Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
okay,
I have
so you understand my point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you understand my point. And that's good because here's where, you know, we talked about where the money circulating in the black community. Here are kids who live in at least in the general area, is circulating their money on that campus that is serving possibly a black community that lives in the campus area, right? Other students.
Yeah.
You know, and that needs to happen more often. I know some folks who are listening probably like, what? But no, really, that makes a difference. When you keep your money at home, it can circulate within your neighborhood or your area or your community. If you leave and relocate to another state or whatever, well, no, your money is not helping your area. But I'm happy to see that happening more, which I've been talking to a lot of folks that a lot of young kids are looking at staying at home for their education within the state. Not just the state, but in the district, in a sense. Because, you know, there's the Georgia University system. But, again, as I said, that money circulating within that area is really important. It really is. So, all right, so let's look at these topics here. And first, before we do that, I'm sorry, Janet, we're going to get to the topics.
No problem.
We didn't, we got 2 hours. We didn't really get into some things last week, but we got some new stuff that we want to talk about. But I want to talk about and bring up some things that just happened this week. And I'm trying to type it in. Okay, here it is. Is that it? No, that's not it. Oh, there it is. No, it's not. Okay, I'm going to have to fix this here. And I'll find the song soon. But you know, you guys, we lost last week an amazing recording artist, Mr. Bobby Caldwell. You knew who Bobby Caldwell was, right, Janet?
Yep. I read the story.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And what's so amazing, which, you know, I knew the whole thing, but, and it was really interesting how they did what they did, meaning the record label. If you look at the album cover of What You Won't Do for Love, they show a photo of an individual, better yet, I should say, a silhouette of an individual sitting on a park bench. You can't tell if they're black, white, Asian. You can't tell. And here's this little orange moon, blue background. But the song itself captured the ears and the emotions of everybody. Because if you think about those lyrics, are legendary lyrics. What you won't do, do for love. You tried everything, but you won't give up. In my world, only you make me do for love what I would not do.
Mm-hmm.
That alone, you didn't care what color they were. But let's go back in time when certain R&B groups, who were obviously black, had released albums. The labels didn't want to put their faces on it. The Isley Brothers can tell you that, and a few other artists. They put some folks, you know, white folks, you know, in their bikinis and everything. Am I right or wrong, Jen?
Okay? Yeah, you're right.
Because white America was not ready to have a album cover in their house with a black picture. So that tells you they didn't have no pictures of black folks in their house, period. But fast forward to Bobby Caldwell, the label said, we can't put a white man on the cover of an album that the song is definitely soul.
R&B. Soul.
Mm-hmm. R&B, right.
Well, he's done R&B, soul, and jazz.
Mm-hmm. And don't get me wrong, it's not just that one song. I have Bobby Caldwell music, okay? But it's just kind of crazy to me when you think about how things were done back then in the fear of having black people on the covers of songs that white people like, but then having a white man on the cover of black people like. That's crazy.
Hey, Michael, it's the same as buying a house. You can't put black pictures and black art up if you want to sell your house because they will devalue it. And then you can have a white person come in for that same house and they will get top dollar selling it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still going on.
Sly and the Family Stone had what? A verse group, right? You remember Sly and the Family Stone, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Majority black, but they had a person that was part Asian. They had a white dude and everything. Did that make us say, better yet, let's go back to this. Jimi Hendrix, he was the only person that was black. His band was white. And you saw them on the album covers. Did we, as black folks, say, I'm not going to listen to Jimi Hendrix because he got white guys in the group?
No.
I mean,
no.
You know, when you really think about it. And I'm glad, to be honest, though. I mean, I'm not complaining. I just find it funny, the thought process of marketing then. We can't put his face on there. He's a white guy. He sounds black. But then
well,
we
that's
had
why
black guys.
Yeah. And I think it was more so because of the white people. Because he sounds black. They didn't want you to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you
if
know
I
what?
To know, that, what was he doing singing music like that? You know, like Hall & Oates. They sung good songs.
Oh, Hall & Oates. I mean, well, they always had a soul style. Well, they obviously, they had like a rock type sound when they first started. But they always loved R&B. In fact, I've seen the interviews. In fact, you and I have talked about this. Sarah Smile would not have been a hit if not for Mr. Lynn Tolliver, a black radio disc jockey. It would not have been a hit if not for the late Mr. Lynn Tolliver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I played the heck out of that song, Sarah Smile.
Yeah, because side A was, I forgot the name of the side A song. Sarah Smile was really a side B song. And Lynn flipped it over and listened to it and said, no, wait a minute. This is the song. And he kept playing it on the radio station, him being the radio disc jockey at that station at the time, kept playing it, and people were like, who's that? Kept calling in. And Hall & Oates continued to say, if it wasn't for Lynn Tolliver Jr., that song would never been a hit. Think about that. That's amazing. One person decided to flip the record over and change the whole thing for Hall & Oates. Just let me read. So anyway, just want to say, and I was trying to pull up the song. I could probably pull it up later on the show, but I was trying to pull up the song, and give some praise and support to Mr. Bobby Caldwell. Wow. You know, he did the duet with, well, he's done duets with many artists, but Christmas time, I always play Baby It's Cold Outside. I don't care what you folks out there in whatever party want to say, that's inviting sexual harassment or whatever the case was that they started trying to do. Come on, this song's been around for decades. And radio stations started, you know, banning it around the holidays. You heard about that, right, Janet? You know, I'm like, come on. Yeah. Where the guys trying to convince her to stay and everything. They're trying to say that, you know, like he's a perpetrator. He's trying to convince her to do against her will and this and that. I'm like, come on, really? Through lyrics of this particular song? And there's been so many versions of it for decades?
Wow.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. You know, come on, y'all. But you need to check on what you're trying to change now in the law. So let's get to that now. So let me pull up some of the things that you brought to my attention, Janet. Give me a minute. Could you send it over to my phone line? I apologize to you guys. Janet shares, you know, she does a lot of the research, if not all, of the topics that we're going to talk about here on the show. And unfortunately, sometimes I have some issues pulling it up here because, see, on my laptop, I got to be able to connect with you and look at the board and make sure I can open your microphones when you're there. All right, so I think I found it. Okay, so, Janet, you might have to follow me on this.
No problem.
Now, for a while now, in fact, for a few years, you guys, people have been saying, Trump's going down, it's over with, he's done. His name is Donald. Just like there's another Don, which they call the Teflon Don. They call that for a reason because, and I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about, you know, the Teflon Don, you know, the gangster.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was able to cover his tracks. He was able to bump off folks. He was able to threaten folks. And he had money.
You talking about Donald
now, this,
Trump? Or are you talking about somebody else?
No,
you're talking about Donald
talking
Trump,
about
right?
I'm not talking about stop now. You're trying to mince words, and I'm talking about the gangster, the Don.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about? Okay. But now let's fast forward to the presidency of Donald Trump. He is considered the Teflon Don, in a sense. And he has been. He really has been, if you think about it. But now we've been saying, oh, he's going down. All right, so now here comes this whole thing of where, well, next week he will be indicted.
He said it.
Okay, he said it.
Mm-hmm, Tuesday. Yeah, Donald said, okay, I'm going to be indicted Tuesday. He called for a protest.
But how does he know that for sure? Because he
told something he don't know. Well, I don't know.
Well,
he said he's trying to stir up the pot.
But actually, I heard last week that he was going to be indicted at any minute, meaning I'm under the impression it was supposed to have been last week.
No, my Cohen had to testify again in front of the grand jury, I guess it was, and so they didn't wrap it up until the end of this week, and they said the people don't meet but maybe twice a week or something like that. So they said they wouldn't really know anything until Tuesday, but then here comes Trump saying that he's going to be indicted on Tuesday. instead of Wednesday. I'm sorry, Wednesday. And he wanted people to come out and protest. I said they already did real bad with the insurrection. So, and they said when you lose, you have to try again. You get a do-over. I guess this is the do-over. If you fail once and you don't succeed or something like that, try again. You know, he's calling for a massive protest, and you got McCarthy right behind him wanting the committees to investigate to see if it's any fraud or anything, or they took any money from the people, taxpayers, in order to indict Trump. He's doing a witch hunt.
Okay.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad. It's gonna be scary this week.
Okay. So again, I said this before though, Janet, and I know you remember me saying this, is that where all these investigations, all these things that he's dealing with, all right, and all the times he's saying that it's a witch hunt, this, that, and the other. Okay. There are people who are saying the government is going against our president. You know. We're going to do this and that and the other, and we already know about January the 6th. So I said beforehand, as they investigate, they got to think about this. If they have proof and they really want to move forward, and I'm saying honestly, if they have proof, I believe they do. Just like any other citizen, any other banker, any other law enforcement officer, if they have proof, they're going to indict you. Even if you're the president former president.
And there shouldn't be a double standard.
Right. We know as president, they couldn't do it. We know that. But now, you're a regular citizen that just happened to be the former president. Okay, you can't arrest the president while he's in power. You can't do that. I kind of wonder if the president shot and killed anybody while in power. Do they take him to prison or be like, well, no, we're going to charge you after your term?
He said he killed somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it.
But you understand my question is that. If any president were to shoot and kill somebody, would they be put in handcuffs and taken, you know, to jail, fingerprint, and you know, put on an orange suit, this, that, and the other? I don't think that would really happen because they are the president. They have a just like anybody that comes from another country based on what is the term? Diplomatic
immunity.
Right. So as president, you probably have that as long as you hold office, but they can charge you. So let's look at the reality of this. It might be, in fact, I'm looking at it where at the time when they did have some kind of things, and I see that our brother Timon is here. I'm going to open up his mic momentarily. I see that where Donald Trump, you know, he really used all his damn pawns. Okay. You know, like a chess game, you got those pawns in front of you to help protect everybody behind you. You help protect your rook, your bishop, your knights and everything. But he forfeited all his pawns and a few of his others. And the only thing standing next to him is his queen and his bishop. His rooks are gone, his knights are gone, all his pawns are gone because he threw all his pawns underneath the bus. When I say that because the queen is Amania, right? She's there. She ain't going anywhere. I saw what they were asking. How come she's still there? Well, we don't know. In my opinion, the bishops are her lawyers, okay? The knights are the individuals who really don't, you know, they don't know what the hell they're doing. I mean, it's like a chess game, and he's controlling the front runners. And I take that back when I say the pawns are all gone, because really the pawns are the followers. But he sacrificed them. Let me open up the mic to another co-host.
Kendra,
I appreciate this.
Kendra, can I say something?
From the West Coast. But go ahead. Yeah, go ahead before I introduce him.
Well, one of the things that Trump did was he made a post this week, and he was saying on Truth Social that our nation is now a third world dying, and America dream is dead. He's doing a rally call. He's calling people to come out and protest and be violent again.
Okay. But keep in mind is that where on January 6th, they, you know, are, I really don't know how to say, but I want to introduce timing, but just to say this, based on what you say in the rally call, and then I want time to chime in. I'm sure he's been hearing a little bit what we've been talking about. But our government somehow, or our protection of our capital, there was a breakdown. But somebody should have known. Somebody knew. I think somebody plotted. There are some folks, I see videos where they're fist bumping like, yeah, come on. It's like, you know, come on, y'all. Wait a minute. Some shit, you know, as a friend of mine used to say, something in the buttermilk ain't clean. And it should have been obvious at that point in time. But now the law enforcement is gearing up, prepared every location in the event something would jump off when Donald Trump is, and I won't believe it until I actually see it live. And
yes,
they may not share it live.
Right?
You know, well, hold on. They may not share live. They might let you see him going to the building, and that's it. They probably won't let you see where they fingerprint him. Because based on what another individual said, look, Donald Trump can go in there. Just because you're indicted doesn't mean that you're going to be put in jail. He can walk in there, do the fingerprints, the mugshot, and walk right back out on OR. He's a former president. So they're going to try to avoid any confrontation, but they're going to try to move forward with the process of the law. Please, you guys, welcome to the show, another co-host. Appreciate when he chimes in. I'm glad he does because he's all the way from the West Coast, which is having they're having the weather of like, what, Alaska times, the rainforest. Please welcome to the show, Mr. Time and Chill.
How you doing, guys? I'm sorry, I'm in between, you know, moving around and everything because I have a show that I have to drive 2 hours to where I'm headlining. I did hear.
Congratulations,
Mike. You said about the Trump search. He is. They are stating that he is, that a lot of people does not, they don't believe he's going to jail. You know, they don't think it's going to happen. But let's hope that he does. You know, let's hope that he is able to, that they'll get him. Because right now it doesn't look like it. I think that Alvin Bragg out there in New York really pissed me off when he didn't take him, when he had the opportunity to get him, and he didn't. You know, so I'm hoping that they will get it. But
here's the thing is that we're, as I just said though, granted, you know, there's so many things he's dealing with in different jurisdictions, right? And what jurisdiction is trying to actually, you know, put him behind bars? Are they, you know, working together? They're not working together. Georgia, okay, the state of Georgia is looking at what he did with, you know, the election deal here when he was trying to get, I forgot his name again, to go ahead and find the 50-something thousand votes. They're looking at the payoff of money. That's in a different thing, okay? So there's a lot of different things that are, what you guys know, have been investigated about Donald Trump's conduct as president. Some of them, of course, he won't be going to prison for. But there are some he probably could be going to prison for, right? when you look at the whole thing about his company and everything. So there's so many things going on, and I think that we, not saying you personally, but I think that the public is getting confused where you got to keep track of everything this guy is being charged for and understand that some could be considered misdemeanors. Some could be considered, well, it's not that serious, but, you know, he could be fined for. But some could be considered a felony where he can go to prison. Right?
Right. Well, what they have on him, the stuff that's in Georgia, those are felonies. Those are for a felony indictment.
Right.
What he has in what he has, like Tish James, she's got that's civil. What Alvin Bragg did, Alvin Bragg cut him some slack. You see, he didn't take him out when he should have took him out when Cy Vance and him had it. And they wanted him to, you know, to do what they wanted him to do. They refused. And so now, you know, he wants to get him now, but that's not going to work because that Stormy Daniels stuff ain't going to hold.
Right, and that Stormy Daniels thing would be really a misdemeanor. That okay, you paid off a prostitute or a porn star through your. But the question is, though, is that did it come through campaign funds? He said no, it didn't. Came through his personal account. All right. So, at what point does that make that a felony? I don't believe that's a felony, but it's still you broke the law. You lied to the public. And if he did use campaign funds, all right, yeah, that would be wrong. But if he used it out of his own pocket, that's not a felony. Still, again,
if he'd have did what Cy Vance's guys had, they'd have got him for a felony. That's why those guys resigned, because Alvin Bragg wanted to be the head of the deal, and he didn't want to come in, and he doesn't understand. Now he's saying, oh, we got him now. Dude, they're going to brush that under the rug. So now we got to depend on what Jack Smith is going to do, what the girl in Georgia is going to do, and Tish James is already going to get him civilly. She's going to hit him in his pocket. So where he's going to get his criminal indictment from is Georgia and what he did with the top secret information that he got.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
yeah.
So true.
So, right. So the whole thing with the porn star really is not the big issue, though they do talk about that. But what he did in Georgia, because there's documentation of the recording and what the request he was asking, right?
Right. They got two recordings. The only thing is one of those guys is dead now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's dead. There's one guy passed on, but they got him. You know, they got him on those. You know, I mean, I'm hoping that white chick who came out and opened her mouth after the jury deal that was when she was, you know, she was on the grand jury and started talking. Hopefully, that won't open the door that they still got enough information in Georgia to get it. Because that, I was totally blown away when that chick opened her mouth and talking about, oh yeah, we did this and we're talking about that, you know. Even though she didn't give up really anything, she should have shut up, and they should have shut them down and told them, do not speak on this at all. Everybody's trying to get paid. I thought she was a plant myself. Because I was like, I know Tish James did not tell her, the girl in Georgia, I can't think of her name right now, but I know she didn't tell her it was cool for her to speak. Even though she really didn't say a lot, she said enough. But you don't want to get the defense attorney anything.
She answered the questions, right, the way she answered the questions, she said, she kept saying, I'm trying to think of the, was it verbatim or this, that, and the other, what she heard, this, that, and the other. She kept using those type of terms. It wasn't verbatim or what I understood it to be, you know, based on what, she, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
The way her responses were. Yeah, it can be questionable. I'm not saying for sure. She said, well, you know, I have to say this in a verbatim way, and it was allowed in the court. of what she allegedly heard or took those responses to be, or the meaning of those. I understand what you mean, and right, I thought about that, you know, and how much leverage did that have in her testimony, okay? So, but now, last week, the indictment was supposed to come down. Now they're saying it's going to come down this week. We see where law enforcement is ramping up this whole thing. As Janet just said, Donald Trump is reaching out to his base to, in fact, he said that he's asking his base to never vote again Republican. Remember, Donald Trump was Democrat at one point. He's been every party in his lifetime, right? Mm-hmm. He's been supportive of the Democrats. He's been supportive of the Republicans. He's been supportive of everything. So he's flip-flopped many a times, correct? History shows. So that tells you something about his whole thing about it don't matter what the party is. I just want to be in power. And when he tells his followers, which he has built an amazing fan base of stupid individuals, in my opinion, and you guys can come on and you know, say whatever you want to say, but I can't believe that you believe in a modern-day Jim Jones of politics of where the proof is there. They're not going after Donald Trump because he's Donald Trump. They're going after Donald Trump because he broke a law. He broke a rule. He did not, he changed the rules as the president. And you being the president, yeah, you know what? You really can. As the president, you can change certain things. What got me was when he said, well, you know what? I ain't got to share my tax things when it's been done since the 1960s. That's what got me. I said, well, wait a minute. Just because you're a billionaire, hell, there's individuals who were presidents who had at least $1 million, allegedly a billionaire. We have to look at that, allegedly a billionaire. There's a difference based on what your actual net or your investments. You might have billions investment, but what's your net, right? Am I right? Okay, so, and then look at your investments overseas. That's been exposed in China. And then he says, we're not going to allow China. He didn't say China. He said China. We're not going to allow China to do this and that. But you got investments over there, bro. Come on. What's going on with that? So that, you know, so again, I say this, is that where this drama has been going on for years and years. Since he left office, prior to him, you know, leaving office. And now, after all these years, everybody's like, you know, that's so much against him. Looking forward to next week. Now, next week, if it comes out on Tuesday, you're going to have millions of dollars spent on law enforcement based on an indictment of taxpayers' money to secure and to support and to make it safe for the people who work in the courts and everything at these locations that they're assuming that Donald Trump supporters probably attack. You understand what I'm saying here now? Now, here's the former president saying, you know, we got to cut government, we got to do this, that. But no, based on your denial, based on what you put together, what you are being charged for, instead of you having the balls as a man and be like, hey, y'all, chill out, I'm innocent. Yeah, I'll go over there, I'll walk into the courthouse, they'll take my fingerprints, they'll take a photo of me, I'll prove them wrong. But they don't do this just for fun. They do it because They know they have the facts, right?
Right.
Well, he said because he's being indicted, he wants people to come out and protest. To me, this is a rally call, just like what he did for January 6th when he said, come to Washington, it's going to be wild. You know, he speaks in code. He gets everybody to do his dirty work for him.
And they
figured
that out.
He doesn't put his hands on anything.
Figure that out, right? He used, okay, but he's out of pawns. I go back to the chess game. He's out of pawns. He's used up all his pawns. If you're the king, guess what? You stand at the back of the row and you sacrifice in a chess game. Right? I'm being honest now. I play chess.
So do I.
Sometimes you have to sacrifice. Okay. Sometimes you have to sacrifice your rook. You have to sacrifice your knight, your even your queen. You could win a chess game without even having a queen. I've done it many times with just pawns and a rook or a bishop to protect the king. And that's what he's doing. So the whole thing is that where, but here's the stupidity. All this money from, as I said, and I say it again, that is taxpayers' money, is being spent on protection of locations that they're afraid that people who support the ignorant ones who support Donald Trump is going to get mad if he's indicted. It's just an indictment. And they were, well, they're going to probably riot and everything. Put those assholes in jail. Lock their asses up. Put a line up there like you do with anything else. If they cross this line, put your hands behind your damn back, asshole. You saw that yellow tape. Call in the National Guard. If you want to spend some money, call them in. But it's sad that we, in the country where we have to do this, based on a former president who's trying to run for office again, who has so much shit on his table.
Trying to beat the clock. He's trying to beat the clock.
To get to be president again.
Mm-hmm. He's trying to get to be president so they can't touch him. So he's trying to prolong things and let the clock run out. But
well,
I think the clock is getting ahead.
And you know what? I think you're right. But, you know, time is not always in your favor. You know, because the things are good. And obviously at this point in time, it's not in his favor just because you're running for office. Now, let me ask you guys something else, though. And Simon, I know you're in transit, but how many people do you think, and I'm not saying just Republican side, Democratic side, are going to be running for president for 2024? First of all, let's go with the Democratic side. Who's going to go up against Joe Biden if he runs again?
Well, right now he hasn't said he was going to run. But I'm quite sure it's probably the same, like, eight people that was on the stage before will probably run. Because I know they're not going to want Kamala Harris to be president.
So you're saying that there's going to probably be eight. So you're saying there's probably going to be eight individuals running for Democrat.
If Joe Biden don't run.
Right, okay. Well, I mean, it doesn't matter if he doesn't or doesn't, but you're thinking it's going to be at least eight in the Democratic side, right?
Yep,
how many do you think?
But if Joe Biden runs, I don't think it's going to be anybody to go against him.
Okay, how many people do you think are going to run on the Republican side?
Probably about 20.
20?
Well, okay. It's building. You know how many there was the last time.
Okay.
It was
so Simon,
many
what's
on the
your
stage,
thought?
You couldn't count them.
Okay. Simon, what's your thought?
I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a good number of folks. I couldn't really say.
Just throw out a number. I mean, just speculating. Based on the past, just a speculation, what do you think of what ballpark range of
who's going to run?
Republicans with Mike. Yeah, just how
just many
running?
It's probably going to be a good 10.
Okay, you said 10. Okay. The average has been 12 to 13, but you said a good 10. You're in the range, but Janet might be right too, 20, because you might get those last minute folks be like, well, hell, these folks are acting this crazy. I might have a better shot, you know? And that shows
right.
you how crazy, that shows you how crazy our government is. Well, hell, if he can get away with that, if he can be president, I can too. Shit. You and I can sit up here and say, you know what, and come with a good speech, by the way, you can run for office if you want to. You ain't got to be a governor. You can just be a normal Joe off the street and spew some bullshit. And if you got enough followers, you can do it.
And can I read something else? Another thing that Trump has said, he said, listen, Trump also reiterated his claim that the 2020 presidential election had been stolen from him, and with it, the heart of our country. He added that American patriots are being arrested and held in captivity like animals, while criminals and leftist thugs are allowed to roam the streets, killing and burning with no retribution. You know, he's stirring up the base. That's what I said. He's stirring the pot up. He's trying to get people excited so they can come out.
But Janet, here's the thing. We do know one thing about former President Donald Trump. That is his model. That's his M.O. is to make people fearful. What I'm saying is that we know he wants to make people fearful. See, you know, he wants to take, you know, the focus off of what's really the concerns of the American public. We know that. But he uses that, and he points fingers at, you know, crime and this and the other. Hey, look, crime is going to be here. I'm not saying that it can't be curbed, but it's not going to be stopped. Let's look at the reality. Crime can be curbed, but it will never be stopped. We have to look at that. You look at which we talked about this. Here's a guy who had control of a whole freaking county. His family had control of a freaking county as judges, as attorneys and everything for decades, for over 100 years. 100 years. We just talked about that, a week or two ago? And then he murders his own wife and his own son? But nobody even thought about that being possible. And it won't be the last time. That's the sad thing, is that where people are like, oh, well, that's the Maddow family. You know, they're a good family. They, you know, but you don't know what the hell's going on behind the doors of the Maddow family. And when the Maddow family is in charge of the judicial system and the police department, you have no say-so. Now, let me say this before we move forward, because the time is now 6:58. Take a look at the fact that the death of the so-called gay kid, right, who was killed, and many people said that the son Buster had something to do with that young man's murder. They're reopening the case, and guess what they're doing? They're bringing his body, they're resuming his body out of the ground.
For an autopsy?
Well, yeah, you could call that term, yeah. Well, actually, forensics, right. They're going to look at the forensics, because obviously no one really did an autopsy on him. They said, oh, he got hit by a car. All right, cool. He dead. Bury him. No, they're going to look at forensics. Have you seen that? So now it's opening up a whole new case based on the father killing his own wife and his one son, or his other son. One son is still alive. So see, this is what I'm saying, is that we're, it's just amazing of where people think that people with money you cannot stand up against. People with money you have to bow down to. People with money are gods. And it's like, no, they're not. They're, you know, come on, y'all. You gotta think better. And if you look at these stories, and Janet, you know, I don't watch none of these crime shows and shit. When you and I talk, I tell you, I'm looking at court TV. And some folks might say, court TV? But what you watch that for? Because it's real trials. This ain't no actors and shit, yo. Yeah, there's no, okay. But all I'm saying is that, hold on for a minute. For the people who ask me, why you watch that? These are not actors. These are real freaking crimes. Real stories. See, sometimes you will hear about a murder and you hear everybody jump up and down about the shit and everything for about maybe a month or two. Then you don't hear nothing else about it. Then 2-3 years later, it goes to trial. And guess who's going to broadcast it? Court freaking TV. You don't forgot about this shit. I haven't. I don't forget about it. When I feel, I'll be like, wow, okay, they're going to do this story? Yeah, I want to see. And when they show it live in the courtroom, the individual who committed the crime, and when you hear the arguments and everything, it educates you, at least me, maybe not you, meaning folks that are watching, but it educates me of how the defense wants to try to flip the script of the evidence. And that's very interesting to see where the defense attorneys say, well, there's no proof that they, or the one who shot the gun, even though they're, you know, there's residue on their hands when they examine them. I'm like, no, it's the same damn gun, dumbass. It's comical, but it's interesting to see how forensic medicine works, forensic investigations work. But then it is sometimes disappointing of where a person can be found not guilty when the video clearly shows that was murder. And I'm going to say this because I see that I have a guest that's going to be joining us in a minute. I know we had some other topics we're going to talk about, but I might extend the show a little bit longer. I remember seeing this video, and I saw it again today, of a Bells Bonds woman had a client where she bailed him out for $30,000. Now, you know how bail bonds work, right? Mm-hmm. You pay a certain percentage. But what happened was this guy was talking about leaving. If he leaves, she loses $30,000. So she had to figure out, how do I get him here to get him in custody and take him back to jail? So he was on drugs. He has a history. Everything. He never murdered anybody, robbery, stuff like that, but never a murder thing. So she lured him to the office saying, hey, look, you need money. My son's going to sell his car, which is a nice-looking Camaro, GT, whatever. So he comes there, blah, 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 you know, make out arrangements. He comes in. The son is in the room. The mother is in the room with the son. And she explains to him what the situation is. He says, what? That you're under arrest. So why? For what? Blah, blah, blah. The video's out there. Take a look at it. And he said, no, I'm not, you know. She says, put your hands behind your back. She locked the door so he couldn't get out. There's a window from, like, the second or third floor of this office. He goes to the window to try to get out. The son has the handcuffs in his hand, thinking the guy's going to turn around and be handcuffed. He's like, no, he's going towards the window, the individual who's you know, she's trying to arrest. The Bell's bond woman opens up the drawer, pulls out her pistol, and as the guy is trying to go out the window, she shoots him. And you hear him say, "What the fuck? Oh, my God." You hear it. You see her pointing the gun and shoot him, but you don't see him. So then when they go to court, here's where the story twists. They turn around and say that where she claims that, well, he was flirting with my daughter, rubbing on her, touching her. He flirted with me and everything. I was worried that he might come back and you know, threaten me or kill me and this, that, and the other. Guess what? She was found not guilty. Because the prosecutor charged her for first-degree murder instead of second-degree manslaughter. So here's what we have to look at, the charges. Remember in Florida, Trayvon, some people questioned the charge.
Yeah.
You remember that timing?
Yeah.
Of what the prosecutor was looking for. The charge, you have to be on point. And then some states are different. Either you got to go with this or go with that, because once the judge explains to the jury, they have to base their decision on the instructions given. This woman killed this man in fear that he will run away and she will lose her $30,000. $30,000. And she was found not guilty for shooting him, though he did not have a weapon on him whatsoever. He was trying to jump out a window. Damn system do we have here. I mean, think about that. I'm not threatening you. I'm just in fear of going back to jail or going to jail. Well, I'm just got to take your life then, because my $30,000 is on the line if you jump out this window. What type of fucking system do we have here? Something to look at, something to think about, and that's what I think about. It's sad. A life is more than $30,000, regardless. And speculation of that he will come back, allegations that, well, he was flirting with my daughter, he touched my daughter, and everything. Do you have proof of that? Nope. It never was presented in court. No pictures, no video, no nothing. Just your word of mouth. And a jury is supposed to sit here and agree with it. Obviously, they did. She's a single mother, no husband. She was found not guilty for murder, in my opinion, over $30,000. She's afraid of losing. Our system has to be corrected, you guys. It really does. It's sad. Hey, look, I'm going to go ahead and set us up for a music break. I see that there's a young man that I work with, and I really appreciate him. You know, he found out that we have a show, right? And I appreciate him coming and talking with me and saying, "Mr. Mike, hey, look, you know what? I'd like to come on your show and talk about something I think is very important." And he shared with me what it was. I'm going to allow him to share it with you. He's a single father, and the things he has to deal with, I'll let him explain it, but to being that way and the responsibilities he's learned he has to have. But it's not easy, you know, for any parent, you know, especially fathers, because, of course, single mothers, much love them, because there's guys out there. I saw a guy who has like 17 kids, and he went to court and asked the judge for assistance. You know, like, dude, you didn't have to put your wingy-wingy out there 17 times, okay? So, you know, you had a choice. because all the women are trying to get some money from him, and he ain't got a job. All right, but that was just for a joke, you guys. But, no, this gentleman, I really appreciate him, you know, coming on today and sharing with you guys, because, Janet, you know how I am. I love to have young folks come on it and us listen to their point of view and their experiences, right? That's what we need to do, have a communication between the, you know, the older and the younger, you know, the generals and everything. So right now what I want to do, I want to take a quick music break. And I was looking for this particular song. You guys bear with me. The board is not acting right with me right now. And I'm in my listing of songs, and I know this should be here. But if not, I'll pull up something else. That's never a problem. Let me see. Is that right? Upload. I don't know why. Hold on. Okay. Oh, okay. So while I'm looking for this timing, you're going to be where tonight? Tommy, you still here? No, he's there.
Mike, what'd you say?
I said, you're going to be performing where tonight now?
At the Rustic Theater in Idlewild, California. I'm the headliner act out there doing a 45-minute set.
You're the headliner. Okay. And, okay, congratulations, man. I'm glad to hear that. Definitely. That's fantastic. You're going to share that with us, I'm sure, right?
Share the what?
I said, I'm sure you're going to share that clip with us at some point.
If I'm able to tape it and I can get videotape of it, it'd be great. I don't know if I can. I didn't bring my thing with me, but if I can get it videotape, I will, or it'll be either that audio or video, one of them.
Okay, great. Would love to see it or love to hear it. All right. So let me go ahead and I don't know why I can't get this track up. I apologize, you guys. I mean, I'm really upset with the download here. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and play another track. And, wait a minute. Here's what I'll do. I'll do this. So if you guys don't know, there's a tour that's going on right now called the Legacy Tour. And it is the new edition Legacy Tour. Thanks to Mr. Marvin McIntyre, who shares me the live streams, because he is the manager for Keith Sweat, the manager for, of course, you know, Johnny Gill, which Johnny Gill is a member of New Edition, right? And if you look at the history of these cats, I mean, to be honest, I love the Temptations. I love, you know, the Four Tops, all the legendary groups. But New Edition as kids is really the only group that spawned more amazing single artists and single groups in music history that I can recall. I don't know any other group that has done that. Okay. So, wow. It was amazing to see the live stream last night. And they're just awesome, you guys. So I'm going to give you a little sample of one of their hits, and we'll be right back. In fact, let me do this. Hold on. I'm not going to give you New Edition. I'm going to give you Johnny Gill along with Rendezvous. See? A collaboration. Here we go. All
right, y'all. You ain't got to ask nobody. Yeah.
Got you open.
Come on, baby, you
drive me crazy.
She's the finest thing I've ever seen. Looking like a natural queen.
Next in line was a fly girl standing tall. Signed my name, said, give me a call, baby. You know, the girl seemed insane, the candy gone store. The bodyguard pulled out the back door. I never saw her anymore, it was an in-store heartbreak. 9 to 5, interview for Delphi. Saw a cutie, thought she was on the TV. She said after the show, I was waiting for you. Cool. After the show, she got in the car and running. Her dad was the driver of the limousine. I didn't know she was on 13. Was a young girl heartbreak. People think we don't get lonely, but we're far away from home. We're many 20,000 people, but then they go home. We're alone and off to another city, where everybody knows my name. But when I meet that perfect honey, is it me she wants, or is it my fame?
Yeah. about your story?
My story? Boy, yo, Miz. Do it. Called up my girl and said, meet me on the tour. I got a sweet coat chilling on the 50th floor. And I'll leave your ticket at the door. And baby, don't forget the pumps. She locked the backstage pass in the room key. Thing got caught by hotel security. And I spent the whole night lonely. And it was a hotel heartbreak. Put your mic, don't even sweat it. Jim, hit the outs button now!
Oh my baby. What the heck happened? Is going on. Oh my God, Michael.
Okay, so that was an error there. I apologize. We're going to welcome to the show. Sorry about that. That was New Edition with N.E. Heartbreak. We're back, and our guest is with us. I just opened up his mic, so we're going to welcome him to the show. So you guys, please welcome this gentleman. This young man, he brought his thoughts to me, and he knew that we had a show, and he was like, hey, you mind me coming on and sharing, you know, what I, you know, being a father. And I was like, yeah, that would be great. I read some of the things that, you know, he shared with me. He puts together, like, not necessarily a diary, but I guess like a, you know, just a, well, I guess you could say it, it's a male's diary. And I read it and I was like really impressed. And so I invited him to come on this Saturday. So without further ado, and I apologize for the miscue here. Please welcome our guest, Mr. Cedric Market. Here we go. Give him a round of applause, you guys. Come on. Here we go. All right, audience. Thank you. Audience. Audience. Thank you, audience. Thank you. Audience, I said thank you. Okay, stop. Okay, sorry about that, you guys. Cedric, how are you doing? Are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm here. Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
All right. You know, my audience, you know, they get out of control. I have to, you know, that's what happens from time to time here on the show. Thank you for joining us. I found what you had to share with me very interesting and something I think that should be shared, and I think that many of the listeners should appreciate what you want to share with us. But prior to us getting into the topic, give us a little bit of background about who Cedric Market is. Just a little story about you before we get into the conversation.
Oh, most certainly. Thank you. First of all, I'd just like to thank you for having me, for listening to me and providing me with the space and opportunity to speak up about my issues and current issues in the world today. But me, myself, I'm just a regular guy, Mr. Mike. You know that. regular job, mm-hmm. nothing special about me. I'm just another single father in this world. I'm from Alabama. I'm the biggest Roll Tide fan you've ever seen on this side of the equator. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing I got going on in my life is my daughter, my baby girl, Aubrey. Mm-hmm. I call her Littlefoot. Yes, sir. That's really the thing I need to say. I'm the oldest of two. I come from a single mom, a single parent myself, but my father was more than involved in my own life. So, you know, with me having a good dad, I can only give my child the same thing.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind sharing, then and how old are you, or what age category we can look at you into for the listeners?
Oh, I'm a 90s baby. You know, they say black don't crack, but I got a baby that had them still in front of my ID at the store when I want to buy things. I'm 28. I was born in 94.
Okay.
April 4th, I'm an Aries. My daughter's birthday, 4 days after mine. So that number felt really big in my life for some reason. I don't know. But I'm a young black man. I'm big on supporting our people, but I'm really big on supporting all people. Anybody that's trying to further themselves and better themselves and the people around them. You know, I love kindred energy. I love affectionate people with compassion for the brother, for their neighbor. And I want to raise my daughter the same way, you know. I want to help us all strive to get along better.
Well, you know, okay, so, I mean, I'm going to ask you some of the questions that I think are great questions, but I want to ask you some other things first. At one point, there's a woman in your life, right? You had a relationship. She became pregnant. You're the father, right?
Right.
How did that feel when you found out you were going to have a child? You didn't know it was going to be a girl or a boy, but at that age, and at what age did you realize, or at what age did you become a father, and what was your thoughts in response of, oh, my goodness, I'm going to have a boy or a girl, because obviously you didn't know what it's going to be, but you're going to be a father, or you're going to have a child, right? What age was that for you?
That would be, so my daughter 5 now, she'll be 6 next month. So that would have been close to 7 years ago, 6 years and 9 months. That would have been, I would be in 23, I think, 22, something like that, 22. And that question, that's a great question. That feeling is even better. You can't, indescribable, really, because, you know, I don't know how other people feel about their children, but they really are a gift from God. And, you know, describing that gift is like trying to describe, you know, the divine. That's the only way I could describe it, is divine. It's, I don't think there's anything else that can give you that feeling. I would say it felt like walking across the stage during my high school graduation, or even when I graduated basic training in the Army. I would say, if I had to describe what it felt like to find out I was having a baby with a person. It felt amazing. It felt sensational. It had a dual, you know, feeling to it, though. Like, I was happy to be having this baby, because I come from a big family where, you know, if your older cousin just had a baby and they was, you know, trying to go out the house, you had to babysit that baby. Or, you know, so I grew up as a big brother a lot. But when I finally was about to have my own, when I got that news, I was just so proud and so happy, but also concerned and worried, because I wasn't where I wanted to be in life, you know. So I was extremely proud, but also overwhelmingly anxious to get my act together.
And a little feared, right? Wasn't there a little fear? of the fact that where you weren't, because as you just said, you knew you weren't, I mean, you were proud to know that you're going to be a father, but not knowing that your act wasn't prepared at the time. And like you just said, anxious. What did that anxiety make you do to make some changes, or actually that anxiety, you know, do to make you look at this whole situation differently? And I mean, I'm sure in most situations, it's not always smooth, you know. What were the things that you had to overcome to get to where you are able to do what you're doing now, or what you strive to do at that point in time?
That anxiety and the things I had to overcome, it created a sense of urgency within me that really wasn't there at all. You know, I had been in the military prior, and they were all about installing bearings in an individual. And even in the military, after the military, I would say my bearings were so not there or not fine-tuned, because I don't think I really took too many things serious in life. You know, myself, my own progression in life, having an establishment. You see what I'm saying? Establishing myself, having a home, having transportation, building skills. You know what I'm saying? Just really creating an identity for myself and planting myself where I wanted to be to grow, surrounding myself with the right type of environment. None of these things mattered or even crossed my mind before I found out I was going to have a child, before I became anxious to be a better man. I didn't care about, I'm not going to say I didn't care about being a better man, but I certainly didn't care as much. I was young. It was just me. And
right.
The second you find you're about to have a child, anybody that's mature, that's honorable and about something, they take that responsibility serious. You see what I'm saying? I could not. I did. That's one thing I did not want to fumble. I fumbled a lot of things in life, Mr. Mike. I really have. My daughter and her upbringing, I refuse to let that be one of them. And that's where that anxiety came from. You know, it didn't happen when she was born. It happened the second that stick got peed on and that sign came up positive. You know, I wanted to be there. I wanted to be somebody my daughter could be proud of, because I was proud of, you know, being at the party. I was proud of getting high. I was proud of being with the boys, high scores. You see what I'm saying? A measly check. I was proud of existing. I want to thrive. I want my daughter to thrive. I want to do more than scratch and survive. You know, I want her to be proud, to have a giddy in her voice when she speaks of me. And to do that, I have to have my act together. At the bare minimum, at least have my act together.
Amen. So when you, okay, so I like what you just shared, because, you know, yeah, when you're young, you want to be the life of the party. You want to hang out with your peers and everything, but you had a different thing that was being introduced to you, as you just shared, your daughter. When you say that, and how her being so much of a difference in your life and everything, what have you done recently, or what is it about her? I should say, what is it about her that when you look at her, when you hold her, that makes you feel so good? When you look at her smile and she smiled back at you, how does that make you feel?
It helps me to blossom. I don't know how to say it. helps me to, it brings me out of my negative thoughts and my dark place. It brings me out of my selfishness. Because sometimes I be stuck on self. Sometimes I be stuck on not having energy, not having motivation, not having joy. You know, and all of that gets wiped away when we make eye contact, when she smiles, when I hear daddy coming from her voice. You know, it. It's a treasure. It's the feeling. My baby girl, it's her DNA. I don't know. It's her last name. It's the resemblance of me in her, smiling back at me. You know, it's, I don't know. It's the fact that the love I feel, that ain't nobody gonna take care of her the way I'm gonna take care of her. Me knowing that, you know, that's my baby girl. It changes the phrase. You better be glad I'm not your daddy. You know, because I can tell you, you better be glad I'm your daddy. You got the luck of the draw. Like, as far as, you know, accomplished men go, I'm not there yet. But world's best dad, you know, I can't shower you with gifts, but I can be the world's best dad for this baby girl, and that's my goal. You see what I'm saying? And she lucked up with it. That's my baby girl, and she's the world to me. And I don't think all men are wired like that. Some men are wired just like making money. You know, some men are wired providers. Some men are wired to think for themselves. I'm really, you know, and sometimes I have to take a step back and wonder if it's healthy how much I'm devoted to my daughter. I'm invested and more than interested in bringing her up properly, you know, well-rounded, to where she won't have the wrong type of anything, really.
Experience as much as possible, right? Negative experiences as a father, or better yet, if she chooses to come to you with a question, you're prepared to give a father answer, or whatever you feel is best, because really there's no such thing as a father answer. You can only answer based on what you have that relationship with your child. There's no set answer for every child, okay? So let me clarify that. Cedric, there's some folks who are listening, of course, my co-host, and some folks that are calling in. Hopefully you don't mind if they ask you a couple of questions. I'd like to really let them get that opportunity, but then I'm going to go down the stuff that you had shared, or this listening that you shared with me, and explain what the Fatherhood Foundation is about. Because we're going to get into that, okay? So I want to see if anyone here on the board, the lady of house, Janet Davis, you have any questions Luda, or comments for Cedric Mark?
Yeah, as far as a comment, I don't have any questions right now. But I can tell by the way you talk about your daughter that you care and that you have your act together. And it's wonderful that you were the adult in the room to take on the responsibility of raising your daughter, because a lot of people run away from that responsibility and they don't want to take the ownership. And you were mentioning that you don't have your act together, but you're working on it, and that's all that's important, you know. And so just keep up the good work.
Well, he's working on it. He's working on it, right. He didn't have it all together, but he's on a good path. Right, he's on a good path. I want to go ahead and throw the mic over to Tana Ship, who definitely deals with at-risk youth. He deals with individuals who are in our criminal systems. Tymon, have you ever had any individuals in your detention centers that would talk to you the way that Cedric is sharing about what he's, you know, looking at in his thought? His journey and everything, and have any of them spoken the way that Cedric has said about, you know, their children, what he's saying about what he's saying about his daughter?
I've had some, you know, would be close, but not as I mean, him being the young man that he is. Sedge, I think it's great that you're doing, and I've said to many young guys, I'm glad that you're talking to your children. And, you know, that's the beauty of life, that the more you share of yourself, and that the more, you know, as you improve your life, your daughter's life will improve. So whatever that goal or dream that you have, you know, whatever you are, you know, I would write them all down. You know, I would write my intentions down and to put them that way, because once it's written, it now exists. And you can start to, you know, put your game plan together that you have for your family, how you want to run it, how you want to do it, and you're staying focused. I mean, you're doing, man, whatever. That's the most valuable thing. What you're doing right now is not for sale. You can't buy it. They can talk about being rich, bro. You are rich. The fact that you have the relationship that you do with your daughter and you are involved in her life, you are her first man, you know, and I know you're going to guide her on the way. Stay with it, bro. Keep doing what you're doing. You're on the right track.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Tommy.
Amen. You know, you made me think about a line in the movie, The Ten Commandments. What is it? So it shall be written, so it shall be told. Is that what he said?
Or Habakkuk 2:2. Now that it's written, it now exists, and that, you know, you're putting that, you know, you're putting that. What I do it myself. I wouldn't say it if I didn't do it myself. And I just told my 18-year-old nephew the same thing. To journal, to write down, because he was 18 years old. He just graduated high school, and he didn't know what to do with his life. And he called me up. Now, he's got a father, but he called me.
But you know what's
so funny?
Because
he wanted to know. Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, yeah, that he wanted to, you know, he just wanted to know, and I just wanted to guide him, man. I said, hey, don't worry about failure. Failure is a beautiful thing. It's the only way you're going to grow. It's through your decisions that you make. That is the obligation and the responsibility, I think, in being a man when you're moving forward and you're raising a family. Oh, your daughter's in, she's in good hands, in great hands.
Amen. Amen. But you know what? I think you guys missed that. Maybe I didn't really say it right, but Cedric, you know, when he found out that we had a show, and he said, Mr. Mike, you got a show? And I was like, yeah. And hey, man, I'd like to come on and share some things. He actually wrote, he said, I'm going to write down a few things. He actually wrote pretty much a journal, okay, which I'm going to get into a little bit of it. He pretty much did. And he presented it to me, and I read it, and I was like, this is impressive. I felt like this is really impressive. And that's where I was like, yeah, we got to have this young man on the show, you know. And what I'm going to do is go into some of the things that he shared with me, because he kind of like wrote out a script of things for the questions if I choose to ask, right? And I'm like, hell, I can ask a bunch of them. But here's one. What does it mean to have your child legitimized?
To have your child legitimized, Mr. Mike, it's to protect the relationship you have that you created when she was born, that biological God-given relationship still to this day has to be sustained in the eyes of the law in court, because the government is what it is. You know, I was listening to your show earlier, and Uncle Sam always got to have his nose in every single body's business, one way or another. And you have to have rights in any country. Even though God gave you the ability, you still have to have rights. No matter how able you are to do anything, you know, no matter what you believe in, you still have to have rights. And you in the South, in this South we live in, you know it just as well as I do. Signing the birth certificate does not protect your rights as a father. And that's where legitimation come in. That's the only way, other than getting married, being married at conception. When you create your child, if you're not married, as the father, the only way you can protect the rights is to get legitimized. And that's to be done in court. And it's a process. You know, you have to go pay for the time and the space in front of the judge, and you have to petition. If you have a partner, you know, the mother of your child, if she's for you and supportive of you being in your child's life, then you might not have to go through all of the extremes. But
right, the court system,
if you are in conflict, right, if you are in conflict with one another, or even if you just don't if you don't agree on everything, or if she just don't like you, if y'all don't get along, if it was a bad breakup, and now you have to fight to be in your kid's life, you will have to go through proper channels in court to properly legitimize your child, and you do not want to do it alone because you will set yourself up for failure, and not for failure, but hard times and more trials and tribulations along the road.
No, I follow what you're saying. I truly follow what you're saying because, unfortunately, and here's the thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I agree with what you're saying because, unfortunately, a lot of things that we can handle on our own, if we stop fussing and cussing and fighting, we can sit down and discuss what's the best for the child, what's the best for the child in the long run and not in the short term. But unfortunately, and not just black folks, white folks do it too, you know, and these days and times, everybody want to take someone to court and let the court system handle what we decided to have is a child, or it's not where maybe it was planned, maybe it wasn't. But the thing is, let's look at what's right here and now, right, that child, and what's going to be affecting that child in the long run. That child should know their mother. That child should know their father. But when you give it to the court systems, sometimes the courts get it wrong. And you've seen stories, all of you have seen stories, where the court has made a decision, and unfortunately, they give full custody to one side that was not the best decision, right? So here's another thing that you shared with me, and I want to get into the Fatherhood Foundation. I see so many here, and I'm trying to read off the right one. Price tag. How expensive is getting your child legitimate size? I think you just touched on that with the court system, right? Because you have to spend money going to court over that. Or am I right or wrong on that?
You're right. You're right. Anything in the court costs. Anything. And they're going to make our people pay. You know, even though you would think we paid enough, you're going to pay. You're going to pay. And here in Cobb County, financially, on the dollar, it costs $316 off the muscle just to get in front of the judge about this. And then you got to pay to have the mother of the child serve. And to have someone serve just to means to put them on notice that there's a court, that there's somebody out here with a problem with you. And my problem with her was, you know, I wanted to be in my daughter's life regardless of how she felt about it, you know, and that should be any parent. You know, I don't really, no relations, no child's, you know, relation with their parent should be predicated on, you know, the relationship those parents have with one another. I think every child should have the unconditional love of both parents, as you said. But getting legitimized and being legitimized, it's going to cost more than money, you know, because if you care about your children, it's going to be a emotional cost, a mental cost. You're going to have to persevere through some things, you know, because 9 out of 10 times, men that are pursuing legitimacy probably don't get along with the mother of their child. She's probably making it hard on them. You know, because it's, and we know it. We know it in the community. It's so easy to be a deadbeat. I mean, to me, honestly, I refuse. I could never. But to give up, it's you would say it's not an option, but clearly, because you see so many of them, or you've heard, or you see the single mom story out there so many times, that don't necessarily mean they're the deadbeat, but we've seen it. And it happens. But what we don't know is a lot of these absent fathers was once there. They tried. They were trying. And it'll beat you up, Mr. Mike. It'll beat you up. It'll beat you down. Chasing, pursuing, you know, advocating, pioneering. I'm doing something I never knew about. It's not the first time this world has seen a man try to be in their children's life. Not in spite of, but in through thick and thin, through anything. In contrast, I should say, of her mom's wishes. Because if I had it her way, Mr. Mike, I wouldn't be in my daughter's life. I would not. My daughter would have a deadbeat dad if it was up to them. But just because people call you a deadbeat don't mean you have to be a deadbeat. Just because people call you a certain thing don't mean you have to fulfill that role. You are what you, what as a man thinketh, so shall he become. And I'm sitting here refusing to be a deadbeat, like offering the whole world to my daughter. It's going to cost. Mr. Mike, you got it.
Let me go ahead and do one thing real quick, you guys, for all you all that are listening. Again, I thank Cedric for sharing his story, his experience with this, and I'm sure you guys do too. And I'm glad that you guys are listening and staying here with us during our conversation. Anyone that has any noise in the background, please try to limit the noise if possible. If you have any questions or anything. And I see some more folks are popping up on the board. If you have any questions or comments, you know, all you have to do is hit the number one. And some just joined in. But as we still have our conversation, I'm going to add another 30 minutes to the show because I want to play a little bit more music but get into this conversation. But I think this is very important. This is a gentleman who is honestly opening up to you guys. He wants to be a dad. He wants to support his child. He wants to be in his daughter's life. And that's awesome. No, it really is. He wants to be in his daughter's life. And, you know, don't think that every man doesn't want to be that. There's a bunch of downbeat dads. There's situations, as we just said. There's situations that makes it very difficult for individuals, let it be a male or a female, to be in their children's life. Let me say this. I'm hearing someone, and I'm going to the board, and if I find you, your mic is open, and you're talking to somebody else. It's got to be you because you can't hear yourself. So put yourself on mute when you're on the show, okay? If you're talking to somebody else other than us, okay, and I hate to have to go through everyone. I hate to go through everyone to find out who is.
And then
doing
the phone rings. That might be the show telling me to come back.
So let me go through the board.
I hear him.
And I just found out who it was. I think. I found out who it was. See, look, trust me. On the board, I see everybody's number. I can mute. I can hang up anybody I want to. And all I have to do is just hit certain buttons, and it lets me know who it is. And I found out who it was. So they're on mute. Okay? I'll unmute them when I'm ready. All right. So I apologize, you guys. I see there's 205-478. You know the drill. If you have a question or comment,
in the conversation, just hit the number one. I'll open up your mic. So back to our guest here. Tell us about the foundation, the Father's Foundation. I'm not really sure how to pronounce the exact name, but help me out. Tell me what's that about. Share with all of our listeners the name of it and what they do for individuals like yourself to assist you, and share that information, please.
Most certainly. Thank you. FI, standing for Fathers Incorporated. I would gladly tell you about them. It's a fee-free, award-winning nonprofit organization that provides services for young men like myself, for individuals that they provide a family, they provide an establishment, a background, a support group. They provide all of this, a classroom. It's an organization. Mm-hmm. Again, let me repeat it, fee-free. It don't cost you nothing. It's a bunch of life skills. It's a bunch of coaches. It's a bunch of professionals dedicating, providing you with services that you would normally have to pay a pretty penny for, Mr. Mike. These folks we met, mm-hmm. these folks got me into a program. We had classes twice a week over the phone, not over the phone, but through Zoom meetings. You see what I'm saying? Visual meetings. And we just talked. And we had a coach. And they coached us up better men for our families, for our communities, for our environment, for our children, first and foremost.
Okay.
And they taught us how to be better dads, how to not be so indulgent, involved with self, with your own life. Because once you create another life, you're responsible for that life. You can't have that spotlight on your own life if you would have if you was alone, because that's not the case. They taught me about radical responsibility. It's a group that just reaches out to people, young men, families that need help being better for their children, for one another, for whoever they need to be better for. And I thank God for them, because you know they got my back, and they provide me with support. They will show up to you. They will show up in court with you. You do get a certificate, a diploma. It is a program, a 6-week program, and I do have contact info for anybody that would be interested in bettering themselves and becoming a better parent for their children and becoming a better person for their spouse. And becoming a better person for whatever team they're on.
So I added a few more minutes for us to get that information. Please share the information. I hope that you have it readily available for anyone who's listening that might need to contact the organization. How would they get in touch with them? Can you share that with us now?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You can always just Google Fathers, and they have plenty of contact info up there, and you can reach they'll send you an email right after you get in contact with them. But if you need a direct person to talk to, if you old-fashioned like me from Alabama and you're not too good with the internet, you can reach out to my coach, one of my coaches. His name is Mr. Lamont. His number, his direct number, is 770-282-9311. Again, that's 770-282-9311. And he is one of the top dogs, one of the coaches in Fathers Incorporated. He led me through my class, through my program. He was there for me. I could call him at 11 o'clock at night, and he would help me. You know, if I was feeling bad that I couldn't see my daughter, he would talk to me. And that's what it was. It was a partnership, and I thank God for those guys.
Exactly. Let's see. I'm sorry, I'm listening, but I'm also trying to look and see who's here on the board here. See who is in the chat room. And I appreciate you guys on the board. Not everybody wants to chime in. A lot of folks like to just listen in, so that's great. So moving forward, Cedric, you're able to spend time with your daughter, though, now, right? That's been set up through the courts and everything, or you have an understanding through the mother, or how is that? Is through the courts, or is where you guys have an understanding of time that you can spend with your daughter?
No, it's through the courts. All the time I get my daughter has to be a fight for it through the courts.
Okay. All right. So, but you do. I mean through that being done, you're not having any pushback. I mean, you do get the time that you are allowed through the court system, and you do make sure it happens. Am I right?
Oh, most definitely. Yes, sir.
Okay.
You know, anything you fight for, you better.
Well, that's what I'm asking, and that's what's so important. That, you know, your daughter has enough time with both parents, mother and father, but, you know, of course, the mother must have custody, but court is allowing you to have time with her, and I'm just so thankful, and I'm glad to hear that that's happening. But you're getting, you know, it's not about what you're getting. She's getting. Your daughter is getting. Best of both
right.
worlds. You know, a mother and a father. Now, hopefully there's no animosity or where there's negatives towards one or the other, that the child is being told, you know, negative stories and other, because that does happen, you know, in situations like that. But as long as you're able to spend time with her through the court system, and who knows, as she gets older, you know, and how is she again?
She'll be 6 in April.
6, right. Oh, wow. When she becomes a teenager, all that's going to change, you know. And by you being there now and having the opportunity to be with her at this age, you know, she's going to be able to speak up on her own. At 6, you know, the courts be like, she's just a baby. She can't speak for herself. But when she gets to teenage years, you know, it's going to change, hopefully, to where you know, the court is going to listen to how she feels with each one of you. And hopefully at that time, you know, she's like, okay, well, I have a good rapport with my mom and with my dad. And maybe she will teach you guys something, you know, of what she wants, you know what I'm saying? She wants to be or wants you both to, well, I'll say this. She'll probably understand that you guys are not together, but the things that where she needs both of you, right? And that's the priority there. You follow me?
Right. Cause yeah,
it shouldn't be a, well, stay with mom and stay away from dad or vice versa. It should be where she's learning from both of you. And unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of divorces and marriages where one parent takes custody, the other parent, you know, does a lot of negative or say not a lot of negative towards the other. I'm glad that the court is giving you the opportunity to be with your daughter, and you have to take, you know, advantage of that. And what you share with us is that that's what you're doing, being, you know, a father to your daughter by any means possible. That's fantastic, my brother. I truly commend you.
I appreciate you for giving me this space, and I just thank you, because it's like,
well,
I said, it's hard. It's hard. You know, sometimes it's not a lot of people that are aware of the issue. You know, and even when I just wanted to clarify, you know, I just wanted to clarify one thing. I only get to spend 16 hours a month with my daughter. You know, ever since I got her legitimized when she was 2 years old, 4 years ago. I've only been able to spend 6 hours a month with my daughter. That's how it's been for 4 years. I've been to court multiple times to modify the parenting plan, but, you know, it's another thing, proving things in court. But you're right.
And, the thing is that where, you know, the court system is set up based on ideals or situations of what the court thinks is best, you know, but for a family. And they have a set way of doing that. But I think that in a lot of ways, in my opinion now, it's a day-to-day basis, or really I shouldn't say day-to-day, you know, different situations. And depending on of the age of the child, you know, your daughter being her age, she can't really make a determination. But I think that when it comes to when they get a little bit older, children are very much impressionable between the ages of 3 and 5. It's been proven, okay? They know what they like and what they don't like. They know what's comfortable and they know what's uncomfortable. That's a fact. Uh-huh. They can sense someone that is that they are comfortable around and who they're not. Not necessarily the mother and father, but even the company the mother and father keep. And children can express that. And I've seen it. I knew a woman who she told me the whole story of where, you know, her sister-in-law became a sister-in-law, was pregnant, and they were getting arguments. And when that baby was born, that baby would cry every time she came around her. And even after years later, she had a fear of that individual. See, that shows how much power it is between the womb and the outside world. Follow me? So that was amazing. And I even witnessed it. And I was like, wow, you weren't kidding. You know, a lot of things are a factor. I add a little bit more time for us to make sure we got this conversation going. And I'm not going to really run out the whole time on it. I added like 30 minutes. But without further ado, I want to go ahead and see if co-host Janet Davis has anything else she wants to add before we get out of here. I see 205-478 is on the board listening. I appreciate you. A few other folks were here. Some folks in the chat room just listening. You know, sometimes people don't want to respond. 205, you have a question or comment, hit the number 1. I'll open up your mic. And Janet, your final comments?
Yes, I'm driving right now, but I just want to say good luck and, you know, keep up the good work. And, you know, through the course, hopefully you'll be able to get more time with your daughter.
Thank you, Ms. Janet. Thank you so much. I appreciate your love, and I'm going to embrace it, your hopes and affirmation.
All right.
Yeah, we all are.
Yeah. Well, my brother, man, I truly appreciate you coming on the show, sharing your story. Keep us posted of what's going on.
Yeah.
Always welcome back, you know, because as you know now, as Janet already knows, that I love to have updates of how things are going. More than likely, of course, it's going to be positive. And just share it, you know. That's what this platform is about. Yes, we talk about a lot of different things in politics and this and the other, but, you know, we are that variety show. We always say that. We've been blessed to have many major, amazing recording artists, people in the movie industry and the recording industry. But what really makes my heart happy is having people that are not in any of those genres, people that just deal with everyday life and can teach us and share with us a lot of different things. Okay, so you're one of them, aren't you?
And I just thank you for that, Mr. Mike, for allowing me to share, because we don't know what we don't know. You know, until we find out, we're ignorant to a lot of things, to all things, until we bump into somebody that's going through it or we go through it ourselves. And, you know, the best thing we could do is share our experience, our problems and solutions with one another to prevent ourselves and our children from going through the same problems, the same petty, you know, cycles that cause us all to lose sleep. You know, let's just help each other get along and progress together. Because we all want the same thing. We all want the same thing.
Yeah. That is very true.
Thank you.
So before we get out of here, let me ask you guys, what's the plan you have for the rest of this weekend? Because this has been St. Patrick's Day was the other day. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm shifting gears here. Okay, so did you wear your green, you guys? No. I know I didn't. I didn't wear anything green. And you know, and no disrespect to St. Patrick's Day, but you know, back when I was a kid, it was a big deal. You know, before you went to school, you got on something green, and remember, if you didn't, you got pinched. I wish a man would pinch me for not having on green. Don't you walk up and pinch me all day long for not having on no damn green? Did y'all wear your green? No.
Yeah.
Oh, you did? Okay, cool. I didn't. You know what?
Yeah,
I bought a
put on a green sweater. But
okay.
But I got Irish in my family, so yes, I had to wear some green.
Well, I had on. Cedric knows I wear a lot of black, gray, and that's about it. Black and gray. That's what you'll see me at work. It's almost like my uniform. Why am I going to get dressed up to go and move a bunch of dirty shit? Okay, but what happened was this, is that where I realized, oh, it's St. Patrick's Day. And I will buy an energy drink. Lo and behold, the can had green on it. So I just held on the can all damn day. I dare you to pinch me. I got a can in my hand with green on it. All right, so I was good. How about you, Cedric?
No,
did you wear green?
I had a green broom.
A green broom.
No, I didn't wear green.
Well, you had a green on. You had green. Okay. All right, so... All right, you guys, I'm just trying to burn time now. Okay, I apologize. What we just talked about, I mean, you can't really tap that. And we definitely look forward to having another conversation. I'm really trying to find something here musically. And then, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to ask St. James to chime in real quick. Let me see if I can get him on the board here. Yeah, I think I got St. James here. St. James, do me a favor. Give a shout out, okay?
What's up, y'all? This is St. James, and you're listening to TMGS, The Michael Gay Show. Tune in every Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for interesting topics and awesome music. Now back to the show.
Thank you, St. James. I appreciate that. That gave you about 30 seconds, if less than 15. All right, so I'm going to have a good time tomorrow because I don't try to pat myself in the back, but it's the first time I've been able to take off on my birthday. So tomorrow I'm going to chill out. I'm going to go downtown, chill out with a friend, and just enjoy the evening. Now, and then what's a good thing, I'm off today, tomorrow. I'm scheduled to work Monday and then off on Tuesday. Now, Cedric, don't you tell what I might do, okay? You hear me? Cedric, you there?
I ain't gonna tell. I'm here.
No. You were muffled now. You better speak up now. Don't tell.
There you go.
I might call out Monday.
Oh, I'm telling.
So then, well, you on the radio.
Huh?
You telling that on the radio.
Ain't right. Nobody on Walmart. Ain't nobody at Walmart listening to my show. I don't worry about them folks.
Yeah, you might see nobody at Walmart listening to your show.
Ain't nobody that work at my Walmart is listening to my show, and they ain't going to go tell me. And even if I did, the thing is I could do it legally because I have what do they call that? What is it?
PTO.
Paid protected. Yeah. PPTO. Paid protected time off. Okay, so I have paid protected time off. I can put that in. If I choose
it. Yeah.
So they can't be mad at me.
I told everybody at one. You was ready.
Yeah.
You showed it.
No,
I told them to do it.
And by the way, I want to give a shout out. Well, again, I said that about the passing of Bobby Caldwell last week. Also, I can't remember the gentleman's name. He was on the wire. Oh my God, what is his name? He just passed yesterday. I think his last name was Ritter. Was it Ritter or Ryder? I have to pull that up. But only in his 60s. He just passed yesterday. And then on our job, where Cedric and I worked, a gentleman, his name was Delroy, and wow, what a great spirit guy. I mean, I'd see him almost every evening that he worked. He worked with me, and every time he would say, hey, God bless you, and I'm like, God bless you, and we would have conversations and everything. Unfortunately, Delroy had, I believe, a brain aneurysm. He was in a coma for over a week, and unfortunately, he passed yesterday. So my blessings and prayers to his family. He was such a just an awesome cat. Yeah, I guess you heard about that, right?
Yes.
Cedric, the Delroy passed. You know, people are leaving. So quickly. You know, it's sad, but that's how come
always
this conversation like what you were just saying. What's so important is getting to know your family, spending time with your family, your kids, and everything. You know, is very important because you never know when they're going to be gone. You just don't. You never know.
Right.
You know, so. Yeah, blessing to his family, and I'm pretty sure we'll get information about his home going. Okay, you guys, we're going to get out of here. And again, I want to thank my guest, Cedric Market, for dropping in, my co-host, Janet Davis, Time and Ship, all of you that pop in here on the board, and some co-hosts could not make it this Saturday. But they'll be back next week. You know, they have lives, too. They have family they have to deal with. But we're going to get out of here. Thank you for tuning in. I want to play a track from a friend of mine who former member of the group Ozone on the Motown label. And, do I want to play that? Nah, I'm going to move on to something else because I do play his opening track. No, I'm going to play it. I'm sorry, you guys. I'm exhausted this evening. But we're going to go ahead and go. God bless. We'll talk to you next Saturday right here on the TMGS, the Michael Gay Show, the Michael Gay Network. Coming up, you might be hearing a new show on the network. Yes, more details coming. And if you're in the Atlanta area, remember that the new Legacy Tour from New Edition is coming here. I believe it's scheduled for March the 30th, and you got to check it out. I've been fortunate to see some of the live stream from the locations they've just been going through. Virginia, Texas, and everything. It's an awesome tour.
So get your tickets now. Some prices have gone down, less than $100. So check it out. The Legacy Tour, New Edition, along with Guy and Keith Sweat. All right, we're going to get out of here. Here's Jill Foxworth with a track called We Won't Forget, and it's in memory of the black individuals whose lives were unfortunately taken by no means of their own. So with that being said, listen to the names. Love y'all. God bless.
still trying to hold you back.
I came back to let you know, got a thing for you, and I can't let go. My friends wonder what is wrong with me, well I'm in a daze from your love, you see.
What I would not do. Make me do.